I'd ask you to please help me welcome Jerry B. from Hollywood. Is that our sermon speaker?
Hi, I'm Jerry, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm really happy to be here. Really happy to be here. Thank you, ladies, for making this possible, getting me up here. It was a beautiful drive. What can I tell you? I love Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it gave me a life that is really beyond my wildest imagination. And I want to say, welcome to the newcomers. That's huge. It's really huge. I mean, I'm sorry it came to this, but I'm really glad you're here. The good news is there's help. The bad news is it's us. But seriously, I had no idea what I was getting myself into when I stumbled in here 22 years ago. You know, I just thought I wanted to get the heat off, you know, I wanted to get everybody to back off. I thought I'd end up, you know, I'd spend a few days in treatment, I'd come home and they'd all forget about it. And I'd get on to, you know, what I was doing, which is making everybody insane and dying inside. But I also want to congratulate the chip takers, you know, like, I remember when I got 90 days, man, it was like, I remember when I got 30, it seemed impossible. I remember when I got 60, it was crazy, and then, you know, like 90, it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. You know, if you're here, I really hope you're done. Like, that's what it took for me. It took like getting beaten into a state of reasonableness, as the book talks about, you know? I have to be out of plans. So I'm from Boston, I'm Irish, I'm Catholic. Yeah, right? Crazy. Like, I come from a long line of Irish alcoholics. All the men in my family are drunks. My mother was mentally ill. It was crazy. And the last thing that I wanted to do was perpetuate that, right? I would drive by these meetings. I'd see you guys outside smoking cigarettes, chatting. And I would just be like, oh my God. Can you imagine? By the way, I'm really gonna try not to swear.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, God hears me swear a lot, but I'm gonna try and follow the guidelines. Pray for me. So I grew up, you know, the oldest of four boys, and I'm telling you, I had alcoholism from the time I was like 4 years old. You know, I needed a drink badly at 4 years old. I was just a scared kid, oldest of four. But when you're Irish and you're Catholic and you're a four-year-old boy in Boston, it's not cool to be scared, right? It's not cool to be scared. And it's not cool to be scared when you're 10, 12, 15, 16. So I'm terrified all the time. And I got really good at pretending that I wasn't, not letting you know that I was afraid of everything. Went through high school, went through college, you know, went through grad school. Just confused. Like, what's wrong with me? Why do I feel the way I feel all the time? And it wasn't until 18 that I hear people in AA say, yeah, so I started drinking and smoking meth when I was 8. And, you know, that's not my story. Like, I didn't get relief till I was like 19. I didn't find alcohol till later in life. And when I did, like, it was so good. Like, I was free. And I didn't need to drink all the time. I mean, I drank every night, but I need to drink, you know, all the time. It's knowing I had that relief coming, that warm feeling, the freedom to be okay, just to be okay, you know, was huge. And alcohol allowed me to get through those years, you know, 18, through college, through grad school, you know, got a crazy relationship right in grad school, you know, married that person had to be an alcoholic to be with me, to do what I did. But my alcoholism didn't look like, you know, what I thought an alcoholic was. You know, I'm going to school, I'm doing really well at my job. We had kids really young, so we're crazy kids, having kids, but it's all working out, you know, because we're young and we're, you know, and I'm Irish, so I can keep it together. You know, I can get up the next morning, go for a run, burn out the carbon, and do it all over again. And that was like what my alcoholism looked like. Like, I had everybody fooled, and that went on for like a long time, you know? I was doing really well at everything except giving and receiving love, staying out of car wrecks, horrible relationships, because I'm full of fear, 100 forms of fear, and I'm consumed with myself. Like what I want, what I think I need. I want you to love me, but I don't know how to love you back. So everybody's getting pushed away. Kids are like, by now I had 3 kids. You know, I'm skipping now to like working. So say now I'm in my 30s. I have a career, right? I have a career. You know, I'm on TV. I have a big life, right? But I'm dying inside. But I'm functioning at a very high level. And that's really confusing. Really, really, really confusing. So, I like to sort of skip what happened, but I'll just qualify a little, okay? Because I'm really about how I live today and how I got here, right? How I got here. Because it's crazy to think it's like where I am now, you can't get to from where I was. You know what I mean? That's not drastic. I mean, in terms of like, I wasn't in the penitentiary, you know? I know a lot of guys that were, right? Well, the penitentiary's up here, right? Penitentiary's up here in my head. That's where the disease resides. So I'm drinking, we get divorced, the first wife. And things are still going well for me. Like that was good, I had her off my back. Kids are doing well. I get divorced, I mean, I get married second time. Of course, an alcoholic who, like me, can hit it hard, but clean up really well, right? Clean up really well. And, you know, we're going along doing the dance of death. I have custody of my kids because I'm an alcoholic. I'm Irish. I'm Catholic. I'm who I am. So I get custody. You know what I mean? I just work that out. That's really hard to do as a man in California, but I make that happen. It also, the kids wanted to live with me. She was, of course, alcoholic and a little less functional. So I have my kids now. I have a really, really fun wife who also has the same disease. But as I said, it's all up here, right? It's all up here. It's all up here. That's where the disease resides. So we're just crazy, but life's going on. You know, I'm getting jobs. We all look good. People love her. People love the kids. People love me. But it's a shit show inside. You know what I mean? It's It's like, I am dying, and I don't know it. That's the thing about alcoholism. Like, it's powerful and it's baffling because I have a disease that I don't know I have. I just know life feels really weird unless I'm fucked up, right? Or unless I'm involved in the crazy drama, the excitement of the drama. We traded? Oh, you opened it for me. Thank you. All right. So this is where the wheels fall off. She and I, if you've heard the story, people tend to enjoy this story. Go to a dinner one night, and I'm asked to come there and say a few words. It's for guide dogs, of all things. And one of my best friends, who was, by the way, 12 years ahead of me, he was sober by then. He said, "Will you just come down, bring Kathleen, you'll come and you'll just mingle, we'll have a dinner, you know, say a few words on behalf of the guide dogs." Yeah, yeah, great. So we go. They give us a motel, our hotel down in Del Mar. We go to the thing, you know, pre-attendance, we smoke a joint, few vodkas, another joint, few more vodkas. I want you to know the way I drink when I drink. Then we go to the event and it's lovely. And I'm not drunk. I'm just like getting there, right? We have a nice time, speak to the people, everything's lovely. We have the dinner, everything's nice, say a few words, everything's great. We leave, we walk back to the, I think we were close enough. We walk back to the hotel, walk through the lobby. She says, I said, "Hey, let's go to the bar, have a few more drinks." Now I've had a lot of alcohol, a lot of marijuana, but I'm not quite there, dude. Can you relate? I'm not quite there. It's not time for bed. And she's like, "Oh no, come on, we have the whole night, we have a hotel room, come on, we're away from the kids, come on." I'm like, just what? She goes, "Have one and come up." One and come up. I go in, I sit down, probably 10:30 at night. Now, I should interject here that she's as crazy as me in terms of the mind, right? And she's 5'11 and very strong. That will play in. So I'm sitting in there, I got a pack of cigarettes, you can still smoke. I'm sitting there all by myself, probably half the bar knows who I am, but no one's bothering me. I'm smoking my cigarettes and I'm drinking like martinis, and then I'm there, you know, I get there. The click has happened, I'm in heaven. I don't know where, I'm not thinking about anything but me in this moment with my butts and my drinks, and I look across the bar, and there's a couple of what I would term golf pro lesbians who are like not. Anyway, I'm enamored with them, and I'm enamored with, this is 22 years ago, like the fact that they're sitting in this bar, they're having such a nice time with each other, they're clearly in love, they're clearly super happy, and I just get all full of that, you know? I'm not a bad guy, I just wanna, and I just pick up my butts and I grab my drink and I walk over to them and I just say, "Listen, I'm sitting over there and I'm looking at you guys. I just gotta tell you, this is beautiful. Look how far we've come in terms of, you know, you guys in love together. It's just a beautiful thing." And I'm just like whacked out of my mind. But they're enchanted. They tell me to sit down. I sit down. I buy them a few drinks. And cut to, I'm kind of massaging one of their heads. They had like those wiffle haircuts, very, very short. And I was just kind of going like, "Oh, come on, seriously, I know you guys are getting, doesn't that feel good though? Doesn't that feel pretty good? Come on." My big strong wife comes down into the bar. I stand up and she cold cocks me. Yeah, hard. She leaves, I chase her back, and I say, "Honey, you know, blah, blah, blah." Long story short, she collects all her stuff, she puts it in the bag, The one bag we took, she gets in the one car, we drove there, and she leaves. Now I'm stuck in Del Mar, the very angry, crazy wife, and so what do? I drink everything in the minibar and I pass out. I wake up in the morning, I take the train, I take the train, she had taken everything, so I had my clothes in a pillowcase, and I take the train to Del Mar, and I call a buddy of mine, Ed B. You may know him, and he shows up, and I said, buddy, the shit's kind of hit the fan down here in Del Mar, and I think I need a ride from Union Station. And he says, yeah, I heard. And I said, you heard? And he said, yeah. Kathleen's made a bunch of calls, and you know, she had called everyone. She had called everyone and let them know that I was out of control and I was out of my mind and I needed help. And when I got home, there was a note on the table that said, we've arranged for a bed for you in Michael's house in Palm Springs, and until you go, the children will not be home. Meaning they miss school, they miss choir, they miss sports. Could have told me anything else, but when you tell me you got my kids, their lives are gonna suffer, you got me. I said, okay. Gary, my friend, picked me up the next morning. He drove me to this place, Michael's house in Palm Springs. I end up in a men's facility. And I was in there for about 12 days, just doing what I was told to do. Because I want you to love me. Like, I want to be good. I want to be good. So I was doing everything they told me to do. I was getting it up and I was doing my chores. Nothing was really resonating though yet. You know, reading. And on the 12th day, I couldn't really handle it anymore. Like, all the drugs are out of me, all the booze is out of me, and I have nothing to stop this. Nothing. And that was my deal. I could always stop this. I could stop the crazy. I hadn't been able to for 12 days. It was more than I could bear. And I broke into a staff meeting because all the counselors were in a room having a meeting, and we're just being guarded by the techs, right? I'm like, Percy, I gotta speak to Char. Please, please, please. He goes, you can't, man. Staff meeting. I'm like, fuck you. Oh, sorry, I did it. I run down and break into the staff meeting. I'm weeping. I'm out of control. And I just grabbed this woman's Char and I said, you know, I gotta talk to you. She whisked me out of the meeting and she takes me into her office. And I said, you don't understand. You don't understand how I feel right now. I can't survive feeling the way I feel. You have got to give me something. You have got to give me something. She said, honey, I can't give you anything. You're in a treatment center. I'll give you a paper bag because you're gonna hyperventilate, fall on my floor. I mean, I was such a mess, grown man. And I said, then what do you suggest that I do? And she said, I suggest you go to your room, you hit your knees, and you ask for help. And I was just desperate enough to go back to that room with the four guys, the four other meth heads, and go into the bathroom and hit my knees and say to God, God, I don't know if you're there, I don't know if you exist, but I can't survive. I don't expect I'll ever feel good again. But I can't survive feeling the way I feel right now. I literally believe that. I literally believe that. I can't survive feeling the way I feel. And I had, I get choked. 22 years ago, and I get, you know, I had a spiritual experience in that room. And I drank the Kool-Aid, like, in that moment. And then I'm like, I go out to the room and I'm like, okay, but how do you do it? I've bought that what they're saying is what I need to do, but what is it that I need to do? And I got out the big book and I started like going through the pages. You know, I did well in school. I'm trying to find the steps in the big book, but it's like Bill is at war and there's a tombstone and a doggerel and you know, he's on the road with Lois and there's a sidecar and they're selling stocks and I don't understand that. I'm like, fuck! And I get out, but I get out the 12 and 12, right? And one is one, two is two, three is three. And I'm like, okay. And I'm like, I bought in that moment, like I got in God's grace in that moment that this is what I needed to do. I have no problem with the one. Oh, I did all the research out there. I got it. I'm powerless, and my life is unmanageable. And then the God thing, no problem. Like, when people say, yeah, I have a little problem with the God thing, I kind of go, maybe you got to go get done, because if I had no options. If you told me the meeting started at 9 and ended at midnight, I'm like, fine, just tell me what to do. So I had no problem with the God thing. Having said that, I know a lot of atheists in AA, power greater than yourself, does not have to be God. I want to say that. I found God. And then, you know, and the big thing was, so how do I turn my will and my life over to the care of this thing? That's the problem. Like, how do I do that? How do I surrender? All I know, all they've been doing all my life is not surrendering. Like, we're men. We don't surrender, you know? We drive. You know, and I had to understand this concept that when I surrender, I win. You know what I mean? It was these, you know, the book says, these are drastic proposals. And these are drastic proposals to tell me, surrender, quit, take your hands off the steering wheel, and it'll be okay, because that was never the case when I was growing up. It was never okay when I took my hands off the wheel. You know what I mean? If you have parents who can't parent you, then life is scary, and I can't acknowledge to myself that they're wrong. If your parents are wrong and you're a little kid, you're, you know. So who's wrong? I'm wrong. And that's a horrible way to live. So when I found alcohol, that solved that problem, right? So I stayed in that rehab. Okay, that was the first run. 6 weeks in, Char calls me into her office. She said, honey, I have good news. And I said, what is that? I'm going home. And she said, you can go home, but you have really good insurance and you can stay as long as you want. And I said, well, I think I need to get home, Char, because I got a lot of things I got to take care of and control and get back to ship shape and, you know, like crazy wife, blah, blah, blah. Scared kids. She said, well, you should think about it. I called my dad. Went up, called my dad. But then sober, I don't know, almost 40 years. I said, Dad, I can leave, but they say I should stay. He said, you should stay. Clank. Surrender number two. I walked back in there. I said, tell me when to leave. Good boy. And I stayed there almost 3 months, and I got home. And by the way, by the time I left that rehab, I loved that little room with the little bed and the table with my books and my candle. It was just simple and clean and orderly. I knew what I when I got up. I was like a baby, and I just had woken up into a life, you know, that I didn't know was possible, that I didn't know I wanted. So I went home, and I was different. And the wife was the same. And she wanted to do the dance of death and keep up with the madness, the crazy behavior, the the fighting and the screwing and And I would just be like, I just need to take a nap. And, you know, long story short, she left. Okay. My career was pretty much in the toilet and I was losing my house. So she left. I don't want to be left, right? I don't want you to leave me. I was left all my life, you know, as a kid. I don't want to be left. She left. House is gone. And I can't really take care of three teenagers. So my wife, ex-wife, comes down, gets a house, and we kind of co-parent. She helps me. But I'm like losing shit. And I'm like, God. I'm trying to straighten out my life and everything's going away. And it was like the best thing that could have happened to me. Because what I did was I threw myself into Alcoholics Anonymous like a dying man, like a lunatic. I mean, just all I did was go to meetings and correct homework, cook dinner, and repeat over and over and over and over again. You know, I mean, driving down Ventura Boulevard, like listening to a speaker tape, smoking cigarettes, like looking where the next meeting was. I was like out of my mind. I would go anywhere. If you had 4 months, I wanted to take you to coffee and ask you how you did it. And in about 6 months, I raised my hand in a meeting because I was maybe 7 months, I raised my hand in a meeting at Moore Park in the Valley, and I said, hey, hi, I'm Jerry, I'm an alcoholic, and I am dying. I still want to drink. I was in rehab for 3 months. I've done the first three steps, and I'm dying. I can't stand it. I don't know how you guys are laughing. I don't know how. I'm going out of my mind. And if anybody has any idea what I can do, please come up to me. At the end of the meeting, that's the last time I ever said that in a room full of alcoholics. And of course, the last guy, the guy that I least wanted to come up to me, came up to me, and he said, have you written a fourth step out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous? And I said, no, I haven't. Is that the blue book? He's like, yeah, the blue book. And I said, no, I haven't. He said, you want to? I said, whatever you got. And I wrote a fourth step out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it took a long time. Book talks about thorough. Nothing counts but thoroughness, right? So, you know, guy say to me, I said to him, how much should I write? And he said, the book says, if you've been thorough, you've written down a lot. So write a lot. And that's what I did. And my life started to change, you know? And that divorce, you know, that marriage ended. That was good. You know, everything happens the way it should in God's world, so I'm told. And that was the beginning of my sobriety, you know, and I just 30? Okay. And that was the beginning of you know, real sobriety. I found a men's meeting out in the valley called the Solutions Group. I've never been to a meeting like it before or since. It was half straight men, half gay men, and it was based on the 10th step, like continuing to take personal inventory. It was an hour and a half, no break, and it flew. I mean, when's the last time you've been to an hour and a half meeting with no break? There wasn't a speaker meeting, and it flew. And it was shotgun sharing, so you sat there and there was a leader and then he'd pick guys and you'd come up and you'd share. And it was based on like staying current with all the resentments, the fears, and the sexual misconduct. And it was great. And I got a foundation in that. Like, the 10th step was great because these days I wake up, I meditate for 15 or 20 minutes, and then I say the third step prayer, turn my will and my life over to the care of God. And then one more time during the day I meditate. I might be saying the third step prayer all day long, though. I forgot both times yesterday. I just got busy. Heather, my girlfriend, said at the end of the day, did you meditate today? I said, no, it feels horrible. And she goes, It was evident. Okay, so life goes on, get my career back, fall in love with a normie. Nice Jewish girl. We end up getting married. We end up having a baby. So he's 15 today, and my other three are in their 30s. Big separation. Amazing kid. And we had a lovely, like, this was the first non-alcoholic I'd ever married. She was very organized. And, you know, it was just great. I'd never experienced like that. She was really nice to me. Till she, I mean, nice is a, maybe she wasn't nice to me. She bossed me around, she nagged me a lot, but she made my life great. Do you know what I mean? I was taken care of. I need to be taken care of. I really need to be emotional. I don't mean like make my bed. I mean like I need to be attended to. And really, you know, I need it. I love it. Anyway. About, we look great on Facebook, let me say that. And about 6 years ago, I came down the stairs and I was about to take Henry to school. Henry's 8 years old. And I just kind of kidding around said, hey, you still love me, right? And she said, I do, but we should talk. So I said, oh, okay, let me, you know, I figured I'm one of the things I do, then I'd have to get a little lecture and then we'd go on with things. And I took Henry to school, I came back and I said, so what's up? And she said, I think I'm gay. And I'm like, okay. Like, it wasn't that big of a surprise, but that was okay. I mean, anyway, it wasn't really. But I said, okay, so, oh, wow, wow. What should we do? What are we gonna do? And she said, well, also I've met someone. And I said, whoa, okay. So what should we do? What should we do? And she said, well, I wanna pursue that relationship. I'm like, okay, great. So what should we do? She's like, no, honey, I want a divorce. And I was like, oh, whoa, what? Anyway, I don't like being left. Did I mention that? I like being attended to. And we got a divorce. She married that woman. Mm-hmm. And it was crazy. I was so, so broken. So broken. And I went, you know, I sought outside help. I was already seeking outside help. And I would be on my therapist's couch just like crying. Like, what's wrong with me? You know, for months, what is wrong with me? She said, I don't know. I mean, I think I do, but I don't know if you wanna know. And I said, I wanna know. Why can't I stop crying? Why can't I get worn? Because I had this, like, I had to put this filthy Afghan around me that she had on her couch. I still remember the Afghan. I couldn't get worn. And I was just so sad and so broken. And she said, well, we can talk about what I think it is. And I said, what do you think it is? And I think that it, because Leslie was really mean to me. She bossed me around. She nagged me. We didn't have sex for a long time. And why am I crying? What am I crying about? I'm free. And she said, because this has nothing to do with her. This has to do with what happened to you. I say this for anyone that may have come from what I came from. This is what happened to you a long time ago. We got to do the work now. If you want to do that work, you know, we can do that work. That work is not easy. we can do that work. So I got to, you know, do that work and find out, like, you know, find out what that was about. Because the steps are amazing. Like, the steps gave me a life beyond my wildest imagination. They gave me a God of my own understanding, and they gave me an ability to give and receive love in a healthy way. But some of the stuff I need to, you know, bring to other people. So I just want to, for whatever that's worth to any of you. And as a result of Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't have to burn down my house with her in it, because left to my own devices, that's what I do. I say horrible things about her to my kid. And that's the worst thing you can do to a child, is speak ill. You know? Work it out. Figure out a way if you have a kid. I didn't have to burn down the house. I didn't have to say anything bad about her to him, or pretty much anywhere else, anyone else. You know, they got married, they're cute as hell, we all love each other, you know. We worked it out. And you know what, I wanna say a little immodestly, I think we were able to work it out because I'm sober. Because I don't have those tools. Who can do that? Like, I love her. She's great. There's a reason I marry her, you know? And she's a great mother, and I can acknowledge that, you know? And she can acknowledge me as a great father and as a good man. And she can respect me. I can respect her. We can be together, all of us, and my girlfriend. And I don't know how to do that. You know what I mean? I don't know how to do that. You guys gave me that. You know, this is, alcohol and drugs are mentioned in the first half of the first step. So they're 1/24th of the steps. It's really about, that my life is unmanageable, that I'm ill-equipped to deal with life like regular people. I'm just ill-equipped, you know? And I can't fix my sick brain with my sick brain. I can't. I had to have God's help, you know? For me, anyway, it's not about, like, you know, going out to the parking lot after the meeting and polling the guys in the parking lot, you know, about what I should do. Yeah, I have guys that I have, you know, that I need to go to. But I gotta go to God first. I got to. You know, that's why I write 10 steps. I got to go to God in 10. I got to write all that shit down. I got to read it to my sponsor. I got to go to God, ask him to remove the stuff, and then move on. And, you know, as much as I never want to do it, I never think it will work, it always does. It doesn't work like vodka. You know, but it works. I want to tell you a story about when I was newly sober. 6 months, 7 months, 8 months. And it was just me and the kids at home. And I came, and they were so scared. You know, they didn't know what was going on. All they knew was Dad can't drink anymore. Dad doesn't seem like Dad. He seems happy, but he seems completely different. She's gone. And I came home from a meeting one night, and I went into Jake's room. And he was in his bed, and he was crying. And I said, honey, what's up? Are you okay? Are you okay? And he said to me, I am okay. Are you okay? He was crying because, you know, this is what this disease does. You know, it scares our families, and it terrifies our children. And I said, honey, and I was able to believe it. I said, honey, I'm okay. And we're all going to be okay. We're going to be so much better than we ever have been, you know? And I got to make amends to him at, you know, the appropriate time. And in almost the same week, I came home from a meeting, and I was just, you know, in early sobriety. But guys, if you're in early sobriety, just do what you need to do, you know? Smoke a cigarette, eat a piece of chocolate cake. It's fucking hard. It's hard. It's up and down, it's up and down. Like you get that pink cloud comes when, you know, in the first couple of months when we're no longer poisoning ourselves with ethyl alcohol. But that relief goes away, or did for me. And I needed to find something else. Anyway, I came home from a meeting, it was like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I was just like scared as hell, like you are when you're new. When I knelt down on my side of the bed, I came in the door on this side and went around to my bed. And this, you know, I pray a lot not kneeling. I kneel sometimes, I don't always kneel down, but I was on my knees all the time when I prayed. Like I was leaving no stone unturned. Right? If he wants me to, I'll kneel, I'll do whatever he wants me to do. And I was kneeling down and I was praying, and the doors opened and my other son, Luke, walked in. Now, we weren't praying a lot in my family, you know. And all of a sudden he walks into a room to say hi to his dad, and he sees his dad on his knees praying. And we both froze. And he kind of walked into the room, and then he knelt down, you know, on the other side of the bed. And, you know, and he just bowed his head. And then after a minute, I got up, he got up, and he came around, and he hugged me, and he said, you know, Daddy, it's gonna be okay. And that's, you know, shit like that wasn't happening in my life. Do you know what I mean? I'm just, I'm so grateful for the life that was given to me for fun and for free in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? I just came in here, you know, they told me, trust God, clean house, help another alcoholic. That's all you need to do, just do that. Trust God, clean house, help another alcoholic. You know, I became a better worker, I became a better father, I became a better boyfriend, I became, you know, a worker among workers. I have a way to get out of myself. You know what I mean? 10? 20. I have a way to get out of myself because that's my disease. You know, I'm selfish, I'm self-centered. And that's all I think about, untreated. That's all I think about. And that's just a miserable, miserable place to be. When I turned 14, no, I was with Leslie, so when I turned 8, we were in New York. I was working in New York. It was my birthday, my natal birthday, and she said, hey, what do you want to do today? It's your birthday. Let's go out to lunch. Let's do this. Let's do that. I said, you know what I would really like to do? I would like to go down to the World Services headquarters on Riverside, because they're supposed to have a room like archives, AA archives. She wasn't an alcoholic. She didn't know, but it was my birthday. She said, sure. Okay, that's what you want to do. I was close enough. We had a nice walk along the river. We show up at World Service Headquarters on Riverside. Just a building. Press the button. AA. It says AA. Eighth floor. Press the button. Go up to the eighth floor. Some nice lady just says, hey, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. You want to look around? You want a tour? There's this in there. There's that in there. Blah, blah, blah. I said, can we just walk around? She said, yeah. Go. So we walk in, and they've got all this literature and photographs, black and white photographs, and we're just walking around in there. They have Bill's couch. Wow. Right? You can sit on Bill's couch. And I'm like, honey, this is Bill's couch. She's like, oh, wow, who's Bill? I said, he's the co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous. He's why I'm here. And he is. He's literally why we're here, right? Yeah. Him and Dr. Bob. So I'm looking at all the pictures. They've got pictures of Bill, pictures of Bob together. They've got, you know, Dr. Tebow. They've got Silkwood's picture. They've got, like, manuscripts. They've got a letter from Dr. Tebow. No. They've got a letter from Bill to Ebby. Remember Ebby?
Yes.
They've got all this letters back and forth. Carl Jung, letter from Jung to Bill. Right? I'm like, whoa. And then they have this black and white picture. And I just stop dead. Big breath. Because it's the room, the lobby of the Mayflower Hotel. And it's the lobby, the actual lobby. And you can see the desk right here. And then you can see in the background, you can see the bar and the chandeliers and the, you can practically hear the clinking of the drinks and the, you know, the crowd. And then they have a phone booth. And next to the phone booth, they've got the directory, the church directory that he looked at to make the call to meet Dr. Bob. And I'm just like, whew, I couldn't talk. And she's like, you okay? I said, yeah. And she, I kind of tried to explain it. She said, do you want to stay here for a while? I said, I do, I do. She said, I'm gonna go take a walk and you just hang out. And it was like, if you ever get to New York, look it up. It's astonishing. So my father, who was really my first example, you know, he was my Eskimo. He was the guy that I saw get sober when he was 16, when I was 16. And, you know, he never said anything about my drinking, you know. He never said, hey, maybe you should, you know. And I'd have six beers with him at lunch and then get in my car and drive. It was that, you know, that was a different time. Like, nobody tried to take people's keys away. And that was just normal drinking for people in Boston. You know, you have lunch, you have five or six beers, and you say goodbye, you get in your car. And anyway, you know, he gave me this. And he died. He died this year at 97. Most spiritual guy I ever knew. And, you know, they told him, he was in the hospital and he had a heart attack. That was no problem for him. He was a tough bastard, but his kidneys weren't gonna come back. So his doctor came in, Mass General Hospital, and she knelt down at his bed and she said, you know, Paul, it's been an honor taking care of you for the last 25 years, and we've always been able to send you home. And she said, I don't think this time we're going to be able to send you home, Paul. And she started crying. And of course, he did what he would always do. Worry about the other person. You know, he touched her head and he said, it's fine. It's okay. I'm going to be okay. His wife was there, said, you guys are going to be okay. He had no fear of the end of his life at all. They expected him to die. He didn't die. She came back in. She said, Paul, sorry, we got to get you out of here. We need the room, because there was nothing wrong with him. He was just going to die of kidney failure. And he said, great, get me out of here. And he went home. We put a bed in his living room. And he just, you know, he took visitors, he said, you know, poetry, sang, you know, we all had a great time. And my sister, my half-sister, sat in a chair next to him for the last month of his life, and she would listen to what he was saying in his sleep and then email all of us, you know, the funny stuff that Paul said in his sleep. And then the last night, she was lying in the chair, we're sitting in the chair, and she got woken up by my father laughing. And he was, I gotta say it twice. He was laughing and saying, what the fuck? And then he would laugh again and say, what the I mean, pardon the Navy language, but what the fuck? And then he laughed again. And then he died.
Oh, wow. Never coming to get him.
And, you know, I don't know. So my brother called me when I was on my way to school with my son, who had to get to school at an ungodly hour because he played a sport and had to be there, whatever. And my phone rang at like 5:30 a.m. And I'm driving and I realize it's my brother Peter and it's 5:30 a.m. So it can only mean one thing, you know. And he's calling to tell me Dad died. And I remember I saw it's Peter, the phone's ringing, and the light turns green, and it's just ringing, and I don't move, and Henry goes, Dad, answer the phone. I'm like, oh, answer the phone. He told me. With Henry in the car, I drive Henry to school, I drop him off, hugs, kisses, and I start to drive. Now, I didn't really think about where I was gonna go. Like, I just turned the car. Still got it. I turn around, I'm driving the car. I'm just thinking about my father. And I'm driving, there's no traffic, it's 5:45. And I'm driving. And all of a sudden I realized, oh, because I wasn't going home, the car, I was driving to a 6:30 Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I didn't even know, you know? And, you know, he was clearly in the fucking backseat, you know? He was there. I showed up at the meeting, pulled into the parking lot, meditated, prayed. Meeting was about to start. I walked into the meeting. Secretary goes, Jerry, my speaker just canceled. Can you speak? I'm like, yeah, I can speak, you know. And I got to tell those people why I was there and how I got there and why I got there and the man that was the example for me, you know. And I got to pay tribute to the man that that changed my life. You know, it was so beautiful because he made my life so hard. Do you know what I mean? And then we get to change to the degree that we get to change. You know? I'm just so thankful for all of you. And I really want to just say thanks for my life. Okay. Yeah.
Let's see. I'm going to thank you again. Let's thank him again.